Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Today is Sunday, May 21st, 2006, and this is show number 44. Well, it's been a long time since we've had a new country update, but we finally hit 101 countries with the addition of Tanzania. Tanzania is a country of East Central Africa on the Indian Ocean. Tanzania is home to Africa's highest peak, the famed Mount Kilimanjaro. Tanzania has an enormously high growth rate for internet technologies, estimated at up to 500% per year. Because costs for computers are still quite high, many users share connections at internet cafes or at work. I want to welcome our new listeners from Tanzania, and I'd love to hear from you if you get a chance to drop me a line. A few weeks ago, I told you about a shareware tool called QuizPress that was designed to allow teachers to create online quizzes for their students, as well as to easily create quizzes to print out. QuizPress also allows the teacher to have automatic grading of the quizzes. I asked my friend Cheyenne, who teaches elementary school, to give it a whirl, and here's what she said. I tested out the QuizPress on demo mode. The only difference with demo mode is that you can only make 5 quiz questions. It's $50 to buy for a single user. It gets cheaper as you buy it in quantity. It was very easy to use. I could see it being used as a school-wide tool in middle and high school. Upper elementary, 4 to 5, may find it useful too. If I were still teaching 5th grade, I would definitely buy it. I like how easy it is to use and print out the quizzes and answer sheets. I could even see old school teachers using it. I'm going to play with it some more and decide on whether it's worth buying for 2nd grade. I'm not sure what she meant by old school teachers. Did she mean old school teachers, or did she mean teachers from the old school? Well, either way, I think we know what she meant. Thanks for the review, Cheyenne. I'm sure this will help out some folks considering this tool for their schools. So I think we should start a section on the NoSillaCast where we all tell stories of how we've destroyed a piece of electronics when we secretly wanted it to die so that we could get the new one we were so envious of. Listener Rose from Tasmania sent in a confessional. She dropped her poor innocent shuffle down the drain. And while she was upset about this at first, within about 10 minutes she started thinking, maybe this is a good excuse to go get a Nano. Now, all of you stop thinking bad thoughts about Rose. You know you've done this kind of thing yourself, right? Well, I'll do my confession second. Rose was first and now me, and you guys are after us. A long time ago, I had a Palm 5, and it was a great tool, but it simply would not die. I think it was like 5 years old. I mean, it had this thing forever, and it still looked as good as the day I got it. But I desperately wanted the new Sony Clie with the faster processor and the bright high-res screen. So one day, I'm coming out of the gym, I'm carrying my gym bag, I got my purse, I got a bottle of water, play foreshadowing music here. I have my book, a magazine, I'm trying to get my keys out of my purse as I'm walking, I got all this stuff. So I stuck the water bottle in my purse. So all is good, I'm driving away from the gym and I'm feeling good, but I decide I'm a little thirsty. So I reach in my purse to get my water bottle and my hand gets wet. Oh no! So I pulled over. And it wasn't just damp in there. The lid had let loose, and I literally had purse soup. All of my stuff was just floating around back and forth in there. And, of course, you can see where this is going. I pull out my Palm 5, and there's actually a standing wave pattern in the display. I mean, this thing was wrecked. So I got my new Clie, right? Well, I did wait a day or two because a friend of mine had successfully dried his out when he dropped it in the bathtub. That's a good story in and of itself. He was trying to steam his clothes at a hotel room, so he hung them in the shower, and he had the shower up real high, and then he leaned over to do the little drain thing, and it fell out of his pocket. But anyway, he dried his out, and it worked. But I waited a couple of days for mine to dry out, but it still wouldn't come back on. Yay! So, of course, a couple of days later, after I got the Clie, I mentioned this story to my friend, and he said, well, you did charge it after you dried it out, right? He said that the water like shorts out the battery or something and discharges it, so you have to recharge it to get it to work. Well, I recharged my Palm 5, and of course the darn thing came alive again. But it was too late. I had my new Clier. So I gave that one away to a friend of mine, and that worked well. Well, the story gets even better, though. So fast forward no more than a month, and I'm at this company picnic sitting across from my friend Tim. Everybody else has gone back to work, but we're still sitting there yapping. Shocked. I'm sure you're shocked that I was still talking. Anyway, we're sitting at one end of a really long picnic table with one of those, you know, red checkered paper, plastic tablecloths on it. The tablecloth is taped down at each end, but not at all in the middle, and we're down at one end. Sitting midway down on the table on one side is a water bottle without a lid. Play foreshadowing music here. Anyway, a gust of wind comes up, lifts the opposite side of the tablecloth up, gracefully flipping the water bottle in midair upside down onto the bench seat below. And what do you think might have been on the bench seat right below the water bottle? My purse, of course. Can you believe that? Luckily, Tim has great reflexes. He raced over, and with a clear head, he squeezed my purse almost all the way shut and then poured the water out of it. By squeezing it, he kept most of the electronics out of the water, kept them up high, and of course, nothing else fell out on the ground. I was so grateful, though, because I did not think Steve would ever believe this had happened twice in one month without me intentionally having something to do with it. So I've confessed, Rose has confessed, if you've ever envied a new piece of electronics, but your old one just wouldn't die, and you either contemplated your electronics demise, or maybe even went through with it, however subconsciously, drop me an email at allison@podfeet.com and tell us the story. I bet there's some great ones out there. I'm wondering how many have to do with water. Well, I always promise that I'm going to give you tools that solve a problem. Not sure this one actually fits it, but it was too fun to let go. Let's say you have a song stuck in your head and you don't know the name of it. Never fear. Load up the search screen at songtapper.com and try tapping the rhythm of the song on your spacebar while humming the tune. Tap the spacebar for each syllable that you sing. It's that simple. I tried a couple of tunes, and while it didn't necessarily get mine right away, it included a short list of ones to choose from, and what I meant to tap out was always in that short list. I had my daughter try it and her friend try it, and it worked for all of us. Check out this goofy little application over at songtapper.com. All right, this doesn't exactly solve a big problem you might have, but it was fun. So I've been working on a few ideas to enhance podfeet.com lately. I started to compile all of the tools that I've reviewed into a comprehensive list, and I have a link to it over on the right sidebar. But it's pretty time intensive, so I haven't gotten too far. I kind of started January forward because I was too exhausted to go backwards to October. But I'm trying to think. I think I got tired around March. But if I had an easy way to make nice tables, it sure would be, I'd be more inclined to do it. Hint, hint, Steve of feeder fame. Let me know if you've checked that out and if you thought it was a good idea or if you find that the search is an easy enough way to search for the tools I've talked about. Let me know. I'd like some feedback because if it's a lot of work but it's got a lot of payoff, I'll probably do it. But if none of you guys are going to go look at it and it's just for me, I find the search works really well. It's really cool to have your own website where everything you ever thought was cool is in one searchable database. That's really, really handy for me. Another thing I've wanted to have forever is for my blog area to be wider. I love the way podfeet.com looks, the Beckery theme that I have, and I like the way it looks and the way it works, but the text column in the middle is so narrow, my blog entries end up being 30 miles long. I know you guys, a lot of people read this these entries and don't listen to the podcast, so I figured it really helps people, so I want to keep it going. So the other problem I have is that I'm limited on how big I can make my pictures. So sometimes I've wanted to show you some good detail, but I can't make it big enough because that field is so narrow. So I put out a plea to the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And my new friend Tim Rossi jumped in to help. See, the blog is what's called a content management system. What I write is just part of a database, and the formatting of the site is part of a theme, using cascading style sheets, or CSS. CSS, when you look at it, it's sort of familiar looking, but maybe like if you knew Portuguese, Italian would look familiar, but not quite readable. I've messed around a little bit, and I found the width entries, and I changed them all to numbers that were 200 pixels wider, and boy, did that mess up the site. Just horked it. Oh, it was just, it was not a good thing. So I figured I needed some help, and that's why I sent out the plea. Enter my friend Tim, who did a fabulous job of not just editing the theme for me, but he also put in comment statements explaining what each section does. Because he put in these comments, he's not just, what do they say, he's not just fishing for me, but he's teaching me how to fish so I can do it on my own next time. So I can go back now and understand more and figure out how to do things on my own. The reason the new view isn't up yet is I need to make a few adjustments to it. There's this weird line down the left middle side in the graphics file, and I haven't quite figured out why that's going on. And there's this strange kind of white box that sticks out over on the right. But I think between my experimental methods and Tim's actual knowledge of CSS, I'll be able to fix this up and get it so it's more usable. I'll be sure to make a big announcement when it's wider. I'm sure you're all waiting on the sidelines, waiting for this momentous event. And, wow, podfeet.com is fatter! Anyway, I enjoy this because I'm learning new things from Tim and I'm meeting my objectives. That's heaven for me, you know? Well, you've probably heard by now, but the new iBook replacements came out this week. And surprisingly, they're called MacBooks, but they don't have the word Pro at the end. What did surprise me, at least, is that these are dual-core machines. I thought for sure they'd make single-core machines to differentiate them from the MacBook Pros so that you had a reason to justify going to higher price or going for the lower processor speed, but they made these things into awesome machines. Just in case you haven't read every tech spec, here's a quick recap. The MacBooks are a 13.3-inch diagonal screen, the same aspect ratio as the MacBook Pros. The screen is 1280 by 800 resolution, and they come in an $1,100, $1,300, and $1,500 models. The low-end one is at 1.83 gigahertz, and the top two are at 2 gigahertz, again, dual-core. They have a combo drive on the low one and super drives on the top two. For the PC people here, that's a DVD writer and a CD writer DVD player. They come with 512 megabytes built-in, and they have a built-in EyeSight, which so now there's an EyeSight in every model, and they also have AirPort and Bluetooth in all three of them. Here's the really funny thing, though. The middle one is $1,300. The top one is $1,500. So they're about $200 different in price. There's two differences. The top one has two things the middle one doesn't have. It has 20 gigabytes more of disk space, 60 versus 80 gigabytes, which would cost you $50 if you just upgraded the middle one. So wait a minute. You said it was, I said it was $1,300. Add $50, that'd be $1,350. Why is the upper one $1,500? Well, you can buy it in black. Yes, $150 to buy black. And I'm thinking, oh, that's just crazy. But my friend Bernard asked me, would you spend $150 extra for cool? And my only answer was, well, sometimes. Yeah, I might do that. I keep checking the tech specs to find out there's something else in there for $150, but I can't find it. This $1,300 model is really looks like a sweet machine to me. This is $700 cheaper than the MacBook Pro I'm using. And all you sacrifice for $700 is a smaller screen, which to some people is actually nicer because it's a, you know, thinner, lighter. Well, it's actually not thinner. It's slightly thicker, but you have a smaller aspect ratio or smaller screen size, smaller to get on a plane, you know, a little tighter package, that sort of thing. You don't get real good graphics. It's got integrated graphics, which is unfortunate. But that, you know, most of us are just doing low-end graphic stuff anyway, so I don't know why that's such a big deal. So you get a smaller screen and the integrated graphics, and pretty much everything else is pretty close to the same. In fact, the DVD writer in the $1,300 model is a dual-layer DVD writer, whereas the one in the MacBook Pro is not. So, man, that really looks like a sweet machine. I was describing it to a friend of mine who is a real PC laptop kind of guy, and he said, that's a really good price. And he said, well, it must be really heavy. And I told him how much it weighed. I forget, right off the top of my head, it's around 5.5 pounds. And he said, no, that's really light. That's very, very good. It's 1.08 inches thick, and the MacBook Pro is 1.0. So it is a teeny bit thicker, about as thick as the PowerBook was. Anyway, that's a machine I'd have my eye on if I was writing my own checkbook. So remember I gave a lecture a while ago on how if you're working on a Mac and whatever you're doing seems really hard, you should just step back and say to yourself, this is a Mac. Apple doesn't make it hard. How would this work if it just worked the way I wanted it to work? And inevitably, the solution's just going to be right there in front of you. Well, this could not be illustrated better than a video posted on YouTube.com by Macworld. The video shows a new MacBook, a black one, of course. The guy uses a quarter to remove the battery. Then he takes a screwdriver and he removes three screws and pulls out a small L-shaped bracket. After that, he pulls two levers, pulls one lever first, and it pops out a memory stick. He moves another lever, and out pops the other memory stick. All right, that's pretty good. That's pretty easy. But just about any laptop is that easy to open and remove memory, maybe even a little bit easier. The real excitement was for me when he reached over to the left side of the battery bay, and he pulls on this little tab, and the serial ATA hard drive just slides right out into his hand. This is really remarkable engineering. On the iBook that the MacBook replaces, it was just about considered brain surgery to remove the hard disk. I'm jealous now because the MacBook Pro can't do this. Anyway, if you want to check out the video for yourself, head over to YouTube.com, that's spelled YOUTUBE, and do a search on MacBook Battery Bay, or follow the link in the show notes. I know that the news is all over the 24/7 Apple store that opened on Fifth Avenue, New York, but it's so cool I still have to mention it. The Apple homepage has a time-lapsed film looping, at the time I'm airing this, on their homepage, showing everyone gathering outside the giant glass cube with the big white Apple logo on it. It's really, really stunning. It's a neat effect to watch all the people coming and going throughout the day. If you go to apple.com/retail/Fifth Avenue, you can choose to watch a time-lapse film for each hour the store has been open, so you can see what was going on in 1 hour versus another hour. I strongly recommend watching the 5 a.m. film, and it's not just because you get to see the sunrise. There's a little surprise in there, sort of like an Easter egg. There's something fun happened in the middle of that. I bet it was great fun to be there down there last week. If you'd like to see a slideshow of the inside of the store, check out the Business Week link in the show notes. It's kind of a really long link, so I'm not going to read it out loud here. And finally, if you're not sick of this topic yet, Research Department Niraj sent me a link to a story by NBC News, also posted on YouTube.com, where they do a little video inside the store and then a short and rather mysterious interview with Steve Jobs. To find this one, go to YouTube.com and do a search on Steve Jobs NBC, and it'll come right up. Or, again, you can follow the link in the show notes. Well, the folks at Parallels came out with a release candidate this week. Now, that's different. That's not a beta. This is a release candidate, meaning they think they're almost done. I was kind of wondering what had happened to them. It had been nearly 2 whole weeks without an update, and I was kind of getting used to getting mail from them all the time. I had gone out to their website to check the message boards, and the message boards are gone. It's just, like, not there. This is really odd, and I wish they knew. I knew why they did that or where they went. Maybe they went somewhere and I missed the memo. Oh well, I downloaded the new installer, and when I first launched Windows, I also ran the Parallels Tools installer. Each new revision seems to have updated drivers, so it's a good idea to do that every time they send a new one. I had one happy surprise. When you do run the Parallels Tools update, you're doing something mutant to Windows. You're giving it drivers it doesn't recognize. The OS complains bitterly that you should not proceed. This is dangerous for every single driver that it's going to install. Now, in the release candidate, it gives you an option to suppress installation errors for unsigned drivers if you want. Yay, that's a great idea. I made that choice, and it gave me all the errors anyway. Oh well, they had the best of intentions. I think I told you that Parallels had instituted shared folders in the last beta release, or possibly the one before. That's where you can share a folder between the host operating system, in this case OS X, and the guest operating system, in this case Windows. Before, it would work for any kind of file that was not made by Microsoft. So I was able to share files in that shared folder. JPEGs, MP3s, that kind of stuff worked fine. But whenever I open that shared folders, but whenever I open something from Microsoft, it would just puke on me. It would try to open it, and it would barf, and it wouldn't open it, and it would lock up that directory. So the only way I could get to shared folders again was if I rebooted Windows. So that was kind of a drag. Well, I thought I'd try it in the release candidate, but now when I try to open that shared folder, I get an Explorer window that just quits. I'm not too enthused about this release candidate, and I can't check the message boards to see what people are saying. The Windows Explorer window says, Windows Explorer has encountered a problem and needs to close. We are sorry for the inconvenience. And then your only choice is close. Well, one time in the middle of this, Windows running under Parallels actually stole the IP address of the Mac OS X side. Oddly enough, Windows took 192.168.1.136, which was in use by my Mac OS X installation. OS X, of course, adapted and grabbed the next one in a couple of seconds, but it was not happy about it at first. It was very perturbed. Two things that might be good if I can figure out how to use them came when I ran the Parallels Tools installation. I always click Custom Install whenever that's a choice, because I just like to see what they're trying to install, even if I have no intention of changing what they want to do. Just kind of helps to know what they did. When I saw the list of things it was going to install, it included something called the Clipboard and the Compactor tool. I'm intrigued about what the Clipboard is. The ability to cut and paste between operating systems is certainly a desired option. I am able to use Command-C to copy from the OS X side, and Control-V to paste over in the Windows side. So I'm kind of wondering what this clipboard does and how do I access it. Don't tell me to go read the manual. That's for pansies. I'm not going to do it. Even more interesting in this list was the compacting tool. They actually sell this tool for an extra $50, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to need it. Evidently, it's a known feature of virtual machines that they tend to grow for no apparent reason. For example, I haven't loaded a single application or moved hardly any files over to Windows in 3 weeks, but my Parallels version of Windows has grown from 6 gigabytes to 10.7 gigabytes in like 3 weeks. I may have to test out this compactor tool. That is, if I can figure out how to access it. No, I'm not going to read the manual. Quit bugging me about it. If you want to see a cool video showing a Mac Mini running Mac OS X, Windows, and Red Hat Linux using the cube effect to switch between them in full screen mode, head back over to youtube.com and do a search on fast OS switching, and you can see all three of these in motion. Three is better than one, right? It's pretty cool. Evidently, this is my YouTube episode, because I just have to send you over to see a very silly little movie. It's a small animation of Darth Vader conducting an orchestra of stormtroopers as they play the Star Wars theme song on like cellos and clarinets and piccolos and all that sort of stuff. This is utterly useless if you consider smiling unnecessary. So do a search for Star Wars over at youtube.com or follow the link in the show notes. All right, this is an actual tool that might solve a problem. I'm testing out a new shareware FTP client called Transit from a company called Panic.com. Again, it was my friend Tim Rossi who tipped me off to these guys. I've just started using Transit and it's pretty sweet. The main thing I've noticed so far is how stinking fast it is. It opens the connection to my server faster than CyberDuck and it moved the files really fast. I'm not sure the FTP client actually makes a difference on how fast the files move, you know, fast or slow, but it seemed faster to me at the time. Maybe I just got lucky that day. The interface is more intuitive for a Mac user than other tools I've used. They use good Mac terminology to make it easy, like you have a list of favorites, which is where you save the login info for your server. You can also log into your iDisk from there. I couldn't quite get that to work, but I think I'm pushing the buttons wrong. The other thing is, I remember in the old days, I used an FTP client. I'm talking like OS 8 kind of days. I had an FTP client that had two windows side by side. So you could see your file structure of your computer on the left and the file server on the right, and you just dragged files back and forth between the two. Well, that's how Transit is set up, so it makes a lot of sense to me. I think that's easier. I saw a button on the top that said Synchronize. I was really tempted to just push it and see what happens. but when I pushed it, nothing happened. Well, then I realized that my stuff and their stuff were already the same. Doi. Well, I changed one of the files slightly on my side, and then I clicked Synchronize, and sure enough, it uploaded that file and showed me which one it had uploaded. It showed how many were not changed and how many were changed. When you click Synchronize, it gives you a bunch of choices, like whether to upload just from your stuff to theirs, or from theirs to yours, or to mirror, which is to update older files and delete any orphan destination files. You can also tell it to skip files with specific names, and I can see how you might have some like huge file in one directory and you don't want it moved, or you don't want it moved right away. You might want to move it later. On the left sidebar, you can drag stuff over. You can drag folders over to it so you can access them quickly, just like the left sidebar menu of any kind of Finder file or Finder folder. And it works just like the Finder windows, too. When you pull them off, they go poof when you pull them out, so it's kind of fun. I did like the way they worded things. You've heard me say my stuff and their stuff. That's how they do it. They say your stuff and their stuff, which is really easy to remember. It's better than like source files and destination files or goofy talk like that. I can tell I'm going to have a lot of fun with Transit from Panic.com. In fact, I decided to see what else they make. And they had, they had one called Desktastic, which I think I played with a long time ago, but I'm going to go back and give it another try. Candy Bar, which is for playing with icons, and some crazy app called Statue. I have no idea what that is, but I'm going to have to play with it just for that reason. They got really, really nice icons, like Transit is like a little transport truck. It's really cute. And, you know, I did pick Cyberduck because it had a rubber ducky, so this will keep in alignment with that. Well, Research Department Niraj sent a lot of good content along this week. Have you ever needed to fill in a form and somebody gives it to you in a PDF, but you don't want to download it and then print the black form, handwrite, or type on the hard copy, and for God's sake, use a postage stamp and an envelope, or heaven forbid, a fax? Heck, I don't even know how to actually use a fax machine anymore. I always have to have somebody help me. I don't know what it is. It's like I get all stupid when I get to the fax machine and I do it wrong, so people always have to come help me. Well, anyway, Niraj has been trying to figure this out for quite a while, and he dug around and found a freeware Macintosh app that will do the trick. Here's what he wrote. I had tried using PowerPoint's master slide, AppleWorks drawing tool, image editors, none worked quite adequately. Each of them had blurred the original form text enough to make a difference in how it looked. I found Formulate from adlr.info, and it's a freeware application that allows one to electronically fill out PDF forms and then make a printout or save for later use. Formulate does not have the smoothest user interface. However, the README instructions are very good, and you quickly learn the steps. Well, I decided to give Formulate a try. It is an odd little app with a very unusual interface. Guess that's what he meant by not smooth. When you download and double-click the disk image, you get two files. One is the application Formulate, and the other one is the README file. And I know, I said I never read the manual, not going to read the manual, and of course I would never read a README, but for some reason I just double-clicked it. It turns out this thing is really useful because it explains exactly how to use the application, and the file, the README file, is actually a live practice session. So it was more like a tutorial than a manual, so it doesn't count. So first you drag the README file, which is a PDF itself, onto Formulate. The README has a little form with four types of entries you might run into, and the instructions tell you how to fill it out. The first entry is for your name. Down at the bottom of the screen is a little window where you can type. So you type your name in there first. Then you click wherever you want your name to go in the form, and of course you miss by a mile because you can't figure out where they meant to go, but you can easily drag your name around until it looks really good. Very easy. All right, that was fun, but the next one is to get an X into a choice list. All right, I guess it's not that much different than putting your name down, but it made me realize that you just type over your name down in that bottom field in order to do the next one. Okay, the next one really is tricky. He makes you fill in a Scantron bubble. That's those little forms you had to do in high school and junior high and elementary school where you got to fill in with a pen. So the instructions say to type a bullet by holding down option 8. And of course, a teeny little bullet goes into the bubble. And except, of course, you miss. It's actually outside the bubble. But you drag it in, and now it's like a dot inside the middle of the bubble. So the instructions say to type Apple T to bring up the font menu, which you can also get to the menus if you forget that, and just make the font huge enough to fill in the bubble. That one was a little bit clumsy, but you know how often you actually have to fill in a Scantron. Finally, the author explains how to move an entry after you've filled in more entries after that. So down at the bottom right, there's a button that says Show Hide Drawer. If you click it, all the previous entries you've made are in a list on the right. If you click on one of those entries, it will turn red in the PDF document, and then you can move it. You can't edit the text. All you can do is move it. So if you don't like it, you can hit delete and re-enter it. In order to save the PDF with your additions, you simply print it out as a PDF file. I don't know if you all know that, but if you go to File, Print, down on the bottom left, in every application that has a print menu, you have the choice of print to PDF. I do that all the time when I see a receipt on screen. I just say print it to PDF and I throw it in a folder called receipts. You can also, when you go to print to PDF, you can also hit mail a PDF, which is even better because sometimes you don't even want it. You just want to send it off to somebody. So anyway, I think Formulate is a cool, light little application, even if the interface is a little unorthodox. Hey, it's 188 kilobytes for this whole application, and it does solve a real problem. So I decided to head over to adlr.info and read a little bit. Turns out Formulate was written by a second-year grad student at UCLA named Andrew De Los Reyes, who did his undergraduate work at the University of Michigan. I'm from Michigan. That proves he's cool. Of course, we were kind of a Michigan State kind of a family, not a University of Michigan, but we'll let him off the hook. He has three other applications, C-Free, which trashes portions of the Linux 2.4 buffer cache. I don't know what that is. But he has IRSSIX, which is a fast, snappy IRC client for Mac OS X you might want to check out, and Millicalc, a tiny, small, lightweight Cocoa RPN calculator for Mac OS X. Ooh, another RPN calculator. We might have a whole story about this. Anyway, it looks like Andrew specializes in small, light applications, something we can all appreciate. So go check out his programs at adlr.info. Well, it looks like that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the NoSillaCast. Please keep sending all these great emails to allison@podfeet.com. I love to get the feedback and questions from all of you. And if you'd like to send in a review of a cool tool you like, that would be great too. I'm thinking about setting up a Gmail account so you could actually send in audio feedback as well. If you'd be interested in doing that, send me an email to get me some motivation going. And don't forget to send in those confessions about when you killed off your electronics. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.